Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. In today's special broadcast, we're going to hear excerpts of a new podcast from Keystone Crossroads. It's called Grapple, and it gives voice to people living and working in distressed communities across Pennsylvania. You'll hear conversations that help tell the story of America's profound economic and social changes, including how places have changed over time and what distressed communities are grappling with today. On today's show, Grapple takes us to Scranton.
Can we get your pronunciation of the word Scranton?
Oh, really? Scranton?
No, it's not Scranton. No. I say it as, I pronounce it as Scranton.
How do you say it?
I say Scranton because when I was in college, everyone knew we were from Scranton because we used to say Scranton.
How do you pronounce?
Just say Scranton.
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 Scranton. I'm Naomi Sterobin, and this is Grapple.
Every city's facing exactly what Scranton is. It's not unique, you know. Everybody's got all these struggles that are going on. You know, business, money, politics. It's all over. Middle class, you know, that's what's most disturbing now is that we've lost that middle class.
Kathy Gavin has spent nearly 50 years in North Scranton. She remembers how bustling the area once was, with many different businesses all around Providence Square.
Starting on this side of the street, I'm talking about Climax, I'm talking about the Toscano's Barbershop, then I'm talking to Sterner's, and then the liquor store was here, and then the Taurus Club was there, and then there was Trader's, Vin's Shoe Store, Bill's Sporting Goods, the Belmont, which ended up being Strazzeri's after that. Now you come around, let alone the library, then you're talking Warren Leonard's, then you're coming up, you have Furman's, you have McDonald's Jewelers, you had Cotton Gilbride's, the bar, you know, these little neighborhood bars on every corner. This was so alive, you have no idea. Every single one of them, I mean, we were busy.
Gavin herself owns a business. It's a restaurant called Sterna's, and she's had to make changes over the years to stay open.
You know, we closed lunches in 95, which they thought I was crazy, but because all the businesses were gone. So we didn't have that lunch trade. And we knew that there was a traffic out there for catering, whether it be funerals or whatever. You just have to be changing all the time. Certainly you know that, or now you're done.
The restaurant is somewhat of a local institution and has a loyal customer base. Our reporter, Eleanor Klibanoff, actually used to go there when she was younger.
Every time I'd visit my grandparents, Camp G&G, we'd go to Sterna's, which is known for many things, including their famous old-fashioned, but I always knew it as the only place I ever got to eat fried shrimp, which they still sell, according to Kathy Gavin. My mother, Laurie Leonard, grew up in Scranton. Her father, my grandfather, Warren Leonard, owned a pharmacy in North Scranton right on Providence Square, so I grew up hearing stories about the pharmacy and visiting Scranton.
Eleanor's grandfather bought the pharmacy in the late 1950s and named it Leonard's. Here's what Eleanor's mother, Lori Leonard, remembers about growing up in the business.
So when we were little, we'd go exploring in the basement and stuff. There would be old spindles of prescriptions and the old bottles of stuff that they used to use. I mean, in the days before antibiotics even. And he had so many interesting, weird tinctures of this and tinctures of that. And, you know, everything was written in the Latin names and these old traditional glass apothecary bottles. And I started working in the store like on Saturday afternoons and, you know, ringing the cash register, or making money orders for people, or, you know, it was really fun to do. But really the fun was delivering the prescriptions. So rain or snow, I mean, we learned how to drive in terrible weather because when the weather was bad, people really wanted their medicine delivered. They didn't want to come to the store for it. So, you know, how Scranton is so hilly and those tiny narrow streets would be, you know, skidding down the streets in a little VW bug trying to deliver the prescriptions. And people would give you a quarter or 50 cents for a tip. It was, and my father would always say, no, don't take that tip because, you know, it's our business. Like the non-family members could take a tip.
Her father ran the pharmacy for many years and ultimately sold it in 1991 for a few different reasons.
As time went on, my father, you know, the luster wore off that because things changed a lot. You know, just kind of the chain drugstores started coming in, and they bought up a lot of independent pharmacies. They had bigger stores, and they had bigger volume, so they had bigger, you know, they could have lower prices. There was just a lot more, you know, regulations and stuff that just kind of would wear people down. But so the square started losing business. Some of those old-time stores, you know, just started closing. There were empty buildings. That's never a good thing. Then, you know, things got a little crummier. My father had a couple break-ins and robberies. So that was kind of hard. And the square just really fell on hard times. He had the opportunity to sell. And, you know, I'm glad he did that then. It was earlier than he probably had intended to retire, but kind of like was smart to see the handwriting on the walls.
The new owners actually kept the name, and amazingly, Leonard's Pharmacy is still open for business today. Turns out Eleanor was a kid the last time she'd been to the pharmacy, so she arranged for a visit when we went to Scranton, and our executive producer Stephanie Marutis and photojournalist Lindsay Lazarski tagged along.
Hi, Joe. I'm Eleanor Livinoff.
Oh, hi.
Sorry for my cold hands.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, we are here to talk with you a little bit about the pharmacy.
Okay.
You've got a couple minutes now? Still a good time?
Yeah, come on over here.
Hi, my name is Joe Marquez. I am the manager at Leonard's Pharmacy.
As I mentioned, my grandfather was Warren Leonard. Okay. I'm Laurie's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we want to talk a little bit about the pharmacy back when Warren owned it.
Okay.
Sort of what the area looked like then and when you bought, what North Scranton looked like when you bought it.
Mm-hmm. As you can see, the neighborhood really is, like, we've lost most of our businesses here. It's terrible. 25 years ago, I mean, there were... Every business was booming, you know. Foot traffic was great and squared everything that people would need without having to drive. We had post office, doctors, supplies, pharmacies, funeral home. It was everything you needed.
Yeah, what changed, do you think?
Well, the advent of all the Kmarts and the Walmarts. There were two dress factories in the square. Lunchtime, we had a lot of foot traffic. We used to sell money orders and stamps, and it was different.
Yeah. So, is there any way we could go down to the basement? My mom was telling me that, and you can tell me if this is still there. So, my mom was telling me that when she was a kid working behind the counter, and they still used the paper prescriptions, and they would put it like on the spike.
You want to see? I'll take you down now. You want to go down?
Can we go down and see it? Okay.
Just be careful here.
Okay. Yeah, so my mom was saying they would put the prescription on a spike, and that was like your records. It was just pinning it. Oh. This is awesome. Like, look at this in here. You can see the signatures on them.
So these are all the scripts.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God.
Put
them on these.
So doctors never had good handwriting. Is that what I'm getting?
Have you ever gone through them?
No.
Your mom might know, like, how far back they go.
So they go, I mean, so her memory as a kid is... Because they would play down here.
Well, these are probably before your mom. Some of these, 1945.
Yeah, she remembered ones back to the 1800s. Like, they would go back and say, you know.
There might have been older ones, like, except they could have got thrown out or destroyed. Your grandfather was here about 35 years, 30 years. And then before him was McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And they were here for a good 35 years. And before that, it was Kirkendall.
Okay.
And they were here for about 25 to 35 years. And there was one before him, so now we're going back into 1800s.
I'm Vince Rocco, and I'm a pharmacist here at Leonard's Pharmacy. When I graduated college, there were maybe about 130, 135 independent pharmacies in Lackawanna County. You could probably count them on two hands now. And our business has picked up, mainly sometimes because of more pharmacies, independent pharmacies, giving up because they can't, because of reimbursement, it's not worth it to stay in business. But we're here, hopefully. We hope we're here for a longer time.
Compared to the past, when Scranton had major industries and 140,000 people at its peak, the city today has about half that number. And the presence of big companies in the area is fading. But one company in the area that still employs 600 people in manufacturing is Gertrude Hawk Chocolates. It's located in a small borough just outside of Scranton, and it's been a long-standing family business. Dave Hawk is the owner, and he spoke with Eleanor about how there's a shortage of good jobs in the area.
Well, I guess I got to start with a confession. I like chocolate, but I'm not nuts about it. So therefore, would I... I like chocolate. But if you're going to give me chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream, I'm going to eat vanilla ice cream.
I hope you know we're recording all of this. I hope you know.
No, I mean, I do like the chocolate, but I'm not saying I didn't say I didn't like it.
What does it mean to Scranton or to the region to have Gertrude Hawk based here?
Well, I think there's three aspects to that question. First of all, we're locally owned. And why is that important? I think it's important because every area, the bedrock of their economy, is locally owned because the center of the company is there. The philanthropy, if there's a philanthropy thought in the company, is based in that community. The best jobs for the company are there. And so I think there's a second part to that, and that is, being that we're locally owned, we're not going to move away. We're family owned and have no interest in being anything other than that, so we're not going to sell to whoever. So we have an interest in nurturing another generation. So it's a longer term commitment to the community. And then, of course, there's the jobs. And the jobs are really, our key people are here, but everybody who works for this company virtually works in this building. And we employ, give or take, 600 people in manufacturing. And so we're not General Motors, but at the same time, it's a number of jobs. And I think, again, that's important to the community.
Have you seen other companies like yours, or family-owned businesses, probably on a smaller scale, leave Scranton over the years?
Oh, sure. There was one in particular. The lead company of this area at one time, and I'm going back to maybe the 70s, was a company by the name of International Salt. And they made road salt. Well, they mined it. They didn't make it. But it was a big, big employer, great jobs because they were headquartered here. They sold to Axo Salt, and they remained here as a presence. And then they ended up selling Axo to a Dutch company that actually ended up closing everything here. And that business does not exist. There's not a remnant left. There's not a square foot of office space. There's not an employee of that business anymore. And yet, at one time, that was one of the biggest employers and one of the most important ones because of the good jobs in the area.
Do you think there are job opportunities for people in Scranton these days?
Are there job opportunities? Sure. Could they be better? You can believe it. And I think that's really what's to be said. We have turned out over a number of years a lot of well-educated folks, and they leave the area. Most of them, or a lot of them. And it's because those good jobs that they're looking for are not available or are hard to find. And frankly, are filled with folks that love living here, and so they're not going to move. I think it'd be great to have an increase in better jobs.
I think we've been talking with a lot of people about how Scranton has changed, or the whole region really has changed since, coal, but even in the interim years since then. From a business perspective, how do you feel like Scranton has changed?
Well, how has Scranton changed? It's amazing to me the number of immigrants we've attracted. This was a town that was a white, working-class community. And, today you walk through our plant and you see Hispanics, you see Asians, you see Indians, all kinds of people that, you know, it's amazing to me. They don't want to leave where they were. They're here because this is the dream. Not Scranton, I don't mean, but the American dream, to make something, to be able to live a life.
And we're going to hear more now about how the chocolate is made in this factory tour with Stephanie, Eleanor, and Lindsay.
All right, we are all suited up in smocks and earplugs and hairnets. We are ready to take a tour into the Gertrude Hawk chocolate manufacturing facility. And our guide today is Kristen, if you could introduce yourself.
I'm Kristen Szymanski. I work in the marketing department at Gertrude Hawk.
Well, we will follow you.
Ready?
Yes.
The biggest percentage of our business is ice cream inclusions and sort of ingredients for other companies. So we make a lot of the little pieces of chocolate that go on like Ben and Jerry's or, you know, some other national ice cream brands. And this is the area that we do all of that. These are peanut butter bars, and it's going through the cooling tunnel and then coming off the line. And then she's placing them there so they could be wrapped.
Between refining chocolate and, you know, making the product and then packaging it, you know, it's all self-contained.
Oh yeah, it is. And we still have, where a lot of people do things automated, we still have humans involved in the majority of the process in terms of placing the stuff on the belt, you know, filling everything with the chocolate. So it's not as automated as a lot of companies might be.
I noticed it's a lot of women, a lot of female employees. Is that
tradition? When the company first started, it was almost all women working on the line, but it's definitely transitioned and changed. Like, there's a good mix. A good mix of both now. So we make a lot of chocolate, like I said, for Ben and Jerry's and for Dairy Queen. So when they have big orders in, this machine is able to make them in mass quantities. So, and this one is named Herman because he's a monster and he can make the most product at one time. And this is actually the toffee that goes in Ben and Jerry's ice cream. So down here, there's a chopper that's chopping it up into tiny pieces before it goes into the boxes. See if I could steal some. So here's the toffee pieces.
Oh, excuse us. Oh, that is good.
The toffee is, it's so good.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Patty Satalia, and this is Take Note on WPSU. Today, we're listening to excerpts from a new podcast from Keystone Crossroads. It's called Grapple, and it gives voice to people living and working in distressed communities across Pennsylvania. Let's get back to Scranton, where host Naomi Starobin picks up the conversation at the Gertrude Hawk Chocolate Manufacturing Company.
As we heard earlier, Dave Hawk talked about the demographic changes in Scranton and how more immigrants are working at the chocolate company. Turns out many immigrants new to Scranton often first move into the city's south side, like Rita Patel. She's originally from India and came to Scranton nearly 10 years ago with her family. Today, Patel's family has two businesses. One is a convenience store that also carries Indian groceries. The other is a restaurant that they recently opened. Eleanor talked with Patel at her store.
So how long have you lived in Scranton?
Almost 10 years.
Where were you before?
North Carolina.
So you went to North Carolina first?
Yeah. North Carolina is good, but you know, there is no job. So my friend told me Scranton is good, job opportunity is good. That's why we came over here. I working like 4 years in TJ Maxx. Yeah.
Working like in the store or in the?
Warehouse.
Oh, the warehouse.
Warehouse, okay. Yeah.
Do you like the city? Is it a good place to live?
I think it's Scranton. It's a good city, cheaper, and it's more comfortable for everybody. No crime. Mostly, people, it's very nice and very helpful.
Do you think your children will want to come work for the business after high school or move elsewhere?
No. They don't want to, do the hard work, you know, and this one is too hard for them. So I told them, if you guys get a good education, so I don't like either, they do hard work.
We're going to hear more now about Scranton's growing immigrant community from Gus Fahey. He works at the UNC, the United Neighborhood Centers of Northeastern Pennsylvania. He's the center's director of community revitalization and education. Fahey spoke with Eleanor and Lindsay and described some of the social and economic changes the city has experienced over time.
For the recent immigrants that you work with, where are they mainly coming from?
They're from all over the world. About half of our people that come into the center are from Latin America. The other half is all over the place. Scranton is one of those small cities that is a place for resettling refugees. So we have a large South Asian population. We have a Middle Eastern population. We have an African population that's increasing. So where we were traditionally a community that hosted immigrants from Europe primarily, now we're sort of expanding our vision to being a place that welcomes immigrants from all over the world.
Generally, what is the relationship between maybe more longtime Scrantonians and the immigrant newcomers?
I would say it's mixed. And this is, again, sort of more anecdotally what I hear from people that I've known growing up and then seeing what people say. But the immigrants report that their experiences are very good, that people are nice and friendly in the United States and in this area in particular. And on the other hand, I hear what white people say amongst themselves, and I know there's an undercurrent of either resentment or that people are cheating somehow. You know, they're not waiting in line or they're not working hard enough. I also think that there's this conflation between this long decline in Scranton and then these cultural changes that are happening at the same time. And so people see their neighborhood declining and they associate it with a new face. And I think that's a shame because it undercuts sort of a solution to the economic decline that we suffered for 6 or 7 decades leading up to this century.
Do you think this anti-immigrant sentiment that some people have, is it pervasive enough to sort of have an effect on Scranton's reputation amongst immigrants and that staying power that you're looking for?
I worry about it because I feel like there are a lot of people that think these bad things about immigrants, but don't necessarily say it, and don't necessarily say it in a public forum. And so when people in positions of power say it's okay to express this anger and this resentment, it makes it worse. I worry that people that are here for the first time, that have been through a lot of trials to get here, won't find this to be a safe refuge for them. And I think that would be a real shame. Because for me, we need people that are going to bring their talents and their energy and their ideas, their perspectives about the world. These are all things that we don't have and that we need. So yeah, we would all lose out if we don't help people get settled, feel like they're part of the community, and exercise some of the leadership that they already have.
Are you from Scranton originally?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How have you seen, besides just immigrants, but how have you seen the city change since you were younger?
I think there's a more positive attitude than when I was growing up here. So I think in general, people are more hopeful about the future. As I said, since we had this 6 or 7 decade decline, and that really takes a toll on people's attitudes about the future. And when I first graduated from college, I had moved to Philadelphia and I had come back for a 5-year reunion. And people say, oh, what are you doing? And all I said was that I'm living in Philadelphia. And it was like, oh, you got out, your success, you know, terrific. And it didn't really matter what I was or wasn't doing in Philly. But that was sort of a prevailing attitude that, you know, get out while you can kind of thing. And I don't feel that now. I feel like the kind of people that I spend my time with see a lot of good in this place, and I do too. We're a small city that has low expenses and low crime, and that's sort of an unusual combination. If you have a job that's close to your work, then you can get by without a car. And so you can live relatively cheaply here. Housing is abundant, so you can afford a house. You can buy a house for cheaper than it is to rent a place. The reason is we have a housing stock that's built for nearly twice the number of people that we have. So we really need people to come in and to want to stay and to fill up our houses, to renovate our houses, to shovel the sidewalks, you know, when it snows, to take a leadership role in sort of having neighbors act as a community. We need all that in Scranton to make us a more vibrant community.
going to leave the South Side now and head downtown, where there's an iconic and massive old-school sign that bears the city's nickname. It reads, Scranton, the Electric City. It's a nod to the city's industrial past, where the first electric streetcar system was built in the United States in the late 1800s. And throughout Scranton, there are references to the Electric City nickname all over, whether from street art to memorabilia being sold. And it even worked itself into this sketch on the TV show The Office, which some of you fans out there might remember.
They call it Scranton!
What?
The Electric City!
Scranton!
What?
The Electric City!
Lazy Scranton, the Electric City! They call it that because of the electricity!
And when we were in Scranton, our executive producer Stephanie Marutis was walking downtown and noticed a business bearing that nickname. It was the Electric City Tattoo Gallery, and she wondered whether the shop ever did tattoos of the Electric City sign. So she stopped in and ended up chatting with several of the guys who work there about life in Scranton.
I'm just Pete Farrell from Scranton, PA. I work here at Electric City Tattoo. I've done a couple of the Electric City sign with all the lights and all that. That's pretty cool.
Did you grow up in this area? Did you grow up in Scranton?
Yeah, born and raised in Scranton. I love this place.
What about it?
I just love that it's a pretty tight community when it comes down to like actually like downtown Scranton and all that. And it's rare to find like somewhere like as deep in downtown as like the square and actually see places that are ma and pa shops and not just owned by, you know, big huge businesses and multi-million dollar corporations and all that. That's what I definitely like a lot about this place. A majority of my friends have stuck around, you know, and try to stick it out here. You know, here's where their family is and all their friends that they've been friends with since we were kids.
My name is Elijah Bertel and I'm co-owner of the Electric City Tattoo Gallery.
And are you from Scranton?
I live here now, yeah. I've lived here for like the last 15 years, I guess? Something like that.
What keeps you living in Scranton?
It was close to my original hometown, so a matter of convenience, and then the opportunity to tattoo, so. And now, I mean, I haven't ever had like a lack of tattoos, so it's like, why leave if I'm always busy, you know? Yeah. A lot of like working people like tattoos, you know? That's pretty much it, I think, right? But, working class city, yeah.
Hello, I'm Eli Garrity. I am the piercer at Electric City Tattoo, and we are open for 8 hours a day, and we're busy for 8 hours a day, you know? It's pretty busy in here. It's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of customers, a lot of clientele, you know? It is a college town, so I do get a lot of students.
Did you grow up in this area?
I did. I grew up in West Scranton. I mean, I left the area for a little while, but every time I leave, I end up back here. It is somewhat of a depressed city, but if you make the best out of it, it's really not as bad as you think. It seems, you know, it is like a pretty big drinking town, I'd say. So, I mean, usually if you're not drinking, you're not doing much, so you have to find alternatives, you know? There's a lot of great food. There's a lot of great independent shops.
You mentioned you have tattoos.
I do.
Anything that has any Scranton significance?
I don't have anything for Scranton yet, actually. Which makes me feel a little bit of a traitor, I suppose, because I have something for everywhere else I've lived. But as far as Scranton goes, that's just something I have not done yet. Like, it will happen. Personally, I would definitely go for just a giant pizza tattoo with Scranton in it. Because that is it's the epitome of Scranton. Everybody loves pizza here.
To hear more of The Scranton Show, log on to keystonecrossroads.org/grapple. You can also find all episodes of Grapple on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.